And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast, the podcast, the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Big D and Bubba podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba podcast.
And look at all that canvas you got right there.
So we had Morgan Wade in the other day, and she was talking about how Big D was completely tat-free.
And look at all that canvas you got right there.
I'm so hoping that would be the gold this week.
Yeah.
Oh, yep, so it made good. It. It made it.
Well, you know. She's not wrong, is she?
She could have said it about me, but I didn't offer up that I was tat-free, so I'm glad
thank
it was you.
Thank you to O'Reilly Auto Parts, our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. They are the sponsors of the podcast once again this week, and we just wanted to send much love their way.
We are excited, man. We have a guest.
What?
Patrick would like to introduce
so
our special.
Yes, this is Missy Gallimore, who is like a legend in this town in on Music Row and in the music industry. And she was here, we think, about 4 weeks ago. When was Sam Williams here? About 4 weeks ago?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
And Missy is Sam's manager. So she was hanging out in the green room, and she was telling stories to me and our friend Donna from the record label. And I was just like, you think you might want to come in on the podcast
and
like
good stuff.
Tell us some stories about working with Charlie Pride and Billy Sherrill and you know, I don't know, pitching songs to Tim McGraw and Keith Urban and whatever else. So
it's an interesting job.
Yeah.
It's a weird kind of.
You're a manager now, but you used to be, or you still are. Your real, you know, fame is from doing A&R. So,
and what is A&R? That is like where you go and you discover people and work them into stardom. I have no idea.
Well, for me, A&R is just basically like just finding songs. You know, you're in contact with all the publishers and the writers, and you have all these connections that way. And you find songs, and you're kind of like the gatekeeper between the artist and the publishers. And you get the artist the songs, and you kind of filter through a lot of songs before you choose which songs to go to the artist. But then there's also A&R people that work at a label that are, you know, a lot of things involved with A&R is finding,
like finding the
artist.
Yeah,
defining the artist and getting them signed and things like that, which I do too. But, you know, I started in publishing, and then it kind of like my husband Byron kind of got way too busy producing. And so he's like, hey, why don't you just start looking for songs for me? And it was with Tim. It was the Everywhere album for Tim is when I first started really like listening for songs. So I like found all the songs for that.
How many songs do you listen to?
You said you found all the songs for that? What do you mean?
I got, well, was it
they went through you before they ever got to Tim?
Yeah.
Wow.
So how many songs do you bring to Tim for him to end up with 12 songs?
Ooh, it's a lot. But it's through, you know, the process of a year to 2 years of me just... Tim's, like, always looking. Tim is never not looking. Kind of like the same thing with Keith. You know, you're just... They're just always looking, you know? So I'm just always constantly pitching them songs, you know? And the good thing about Tim and Keith is that if they are really, really into a song and, like, they're 8 months away from cutting or a year away from cutting, they will cut that song. And they will, you know, they're just true to their word. If they love a song, they're going to go in and cut it. Mm-hmm. Now, there has been times where, you know, it's been on hold for a while and then they'll let it go. But Tim is really, really good at that. If he...
Yeah, because sometimes a song gets put on hold and then they end up not recording.
It's on hold for 2 years. And that's
on hold, that's like calling dibs on a song, right?
That's calling dibs on a song. And, holds, you know, three or four years ago used to really, really mean something. Now it's a little looser term. It's also like a little, you'll go to a publisher and they'll go, okay, we're going to play a song, but it's got a little toe hold. And I'm like,
what's a toe hold?
What in the world is a toe hold? Tom from Sony? What, you know, and it's like, what is the difference between a hold and a toe hold?
Did you just call somebody else? I like that. Okay.
Hello, Tom. We're talking about you, Tom. Oh, you know who you are, Tom.
So a toehold, does that mean they have dibs or no?
That means that it's a toehold means that the artist has probably not heard the song yet, that someone at the label has probably put the song on hold, and it's probably been on hold for 6 months before it ever gets to the artist, and it's got a toehold because the artist hasn't heard it yet.
I'm just picturing somebody with... their toe.
On sheet music. Got a little toe-hole. It's funny.
On top of it, just on the desk.
Yeah. They have a whole department.
It's like a little toe-hole.
If I put my toe on a song, nobody would want that song. Right. I'm like, oh, he touched it with his toe.
How many songs do you think people send to you, like, say, in a week, a month? Or
oh, probably, gosh. I probably listen to 50 songs a week. I listen
like
to
50
a lot of
new
songs
that nobody's ever heard
50,
of.
Wow. From publishers here in town, from, you know, writers that I haven't heard, you know, people just always are randomly pitching me things. But I go through songs. I can listen to songs really, really quick because I know exactly what Tim's going to say. I know exactly. I know what Keith is looking for. So now it's gotten to the point where I can I probably shouldn't say this.
No, go ahead.
But it's like I can listen. I can get like two lines into a song, and I can already like, no, not going to work.
Yeah,
two lines into the song.
Well, if you're listening to 50,
you know, you know, and you're specifically if you're looking for those guys, you know what they're going to do and what they're not going
to
do.
And what I was going to say too is, if you're listening to 50 new songs that you've never heard of in your life, you don't have a whole lot of spare time to listen to 5 minutes of a song.
I always thought I would want to do A&R. And do that specifically on the publishing side and listen to songs. But now I'm sitting thinking about listening to 50.
It's a lot.
Completely new songs that I've never heard before.
And not every baby is cute.
No, y'all. We lie and we say babies is cute, but I've seen some ugly babies.
Yeah, you got to hear that song and go, ooh.
Ugly songs. Ooh.
And the hardest thing is when a writer is sitting in front of you pitching their songs. And
how's your poker face?
You have to go, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. I really like it, but it's just really not what we're looking for right now. And it's like they're babies, and it's just like they're just so deflated.
My favorite is the industry standard. They'll play an album for you. They do that. It's the weirdest thing. So we never talk about this on the air, but like they'll have like an album release thing, and you go to this event, and they literally will put the album on, and you have to listen to it in a group of like 30 people.
Or sometimes more.
Yes.
Or sometimes worse, less. Like only like 12 people.
So,
and so everyone's
or
looking
worse
around
when they bring it here.
Oh,
and it's just the four of us. And
yeah,
say,
hey,
you want,
we're going to play this for
and
you.
And then you just have to do this.
Everybody does that. Everybody's got the head bob.
Yes.
So we know a guy, Carson and I know a guy whose head bob is just obnoxious. Obnoxious. Everybody in the room's got this thing going. You know, we're sitting in a room with, like, it was a Warner Brothers thing. So John Esposito's there, and he's got a real kind of cool, like, slow, you know. All the people from the record label have their own version of this thing going. And there's a guy that we know, and he's all...
Yeah, over the
just
top.
Just over the... Just, I'm like, dude, no one's buying it.
For every
no
song?
Every song. Every note.
It was an entire album where they made us listen to. And we couldn't even, look, the music was good, the art, it was great. All I could think of was this guy just having convulsions over there.
Watch out for the head bob.
I have a weird time, like, during those things, like, with eye contact, because I don't want to look at anybody. I'm like,
so awkward.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
So
it's like,
awkward.
That's why people do the head bob. Hard to make eye contact with somebody.
You got your eyes shut.
Yeah. I'm closing my eyes because I'm concentrating. I don't want any outside forces. Yeah.
I was at a thing the other day, though. It was at night, and it was before dinner, and I was tired, and I closed my eyes, and I was like, oh, I'm going to fall asleep. Last thing you want to do is be the guy who falls asleep like Bubba in a meeting, okay? Bubba used to fall asleep in big
meetings.
I wouldn't fall
asleep. I would go to sleep.
Yo, he would go to sleep. It was intentional.
Two different things, yes. I was very open and blatant about it. I mean, why would I hide it? I hate meetings. Meetings are the worst.
So what's a song that you heard and immediately, like, you knew in two lyrics or lines that it was the
Oh, yes. Lord. Okay, there's a couple. Live Like You Were Dying. I know exactly. There's so many songs where I know exactly where I was the minute I heard the song.
Tell the story of Live Like You Were Dying. I know there's some backstory
to Tim. So there, I remember right where I was. I was getting on Interstate to Mumbrium. So Craig Wiseman and Tim Nichols wrote the song. And so Craig Wiseman's publisher at the time, Chris Oglesby, who was at Craig's publishing company at the time, not at BMG. Oh, no, he was at BMG. Yeah. So he's like, hey, he's like, I just heard a song that Craig wrote that I think you probably want to get by to the studio, like right now, and hear this song. So I was getting on the exit at Demumbrium. And I'm like, oh, and then back then it was like I was like so competitive, and it was like always competitive. I got to get the song first before somebody puts it on hold, mm-hmm. and I would do whatever. And so I just whipped that car around and drove to the studio called County Q. Do y'all remember County Q? It was in Berry Hill, and that's where like a lot of the demos and things were cut. And so Craig was in there, and I'm like, hey, Craig. He's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, Chris called me and said, you've got a song that I probably need to hear for Tim. And so I heard it at the studio. So this all happened within an hour. So I heard it at the studio. I'm like, oh, well, okay, Craig, I got to get this to Tim. I immediately called Tim, and I'm like, Tim, I just heard this song, Craig Wiseman. You got to hear it. And the album was all pretty much done, and I sent it to him, called me back, and he's like, I'm cutting it. Go in the studio, we cut it, and...
I mean, it's one of the biggest records, but the perfect artist. Like, that. Yes. Anyone could have had a hit.
Yes.
I could have sang Live Like You Were Dying and cracked the top 60.
Yes.
Like, that song was just so big.
And it's still today. Still when you hear it today.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember... like Ronnie Dunn and people like that would hear the song and they would go, man. And they're talking about Tim at the time, and they would say, man, the monster's in the runway or something like that. And I was like, what does that mean? But Tim is the most – I mean, yeah, I can pitch him songs, but he is a great song guy. He's just
– He's really good at being able to take any song and make it his own.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the same way with Keith. There's not a lot of artists that still do that. I mean, you know, you've got the Kennys and the Keiths and the Tims and, you know, the people like that that still cut great outside songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a new artist coming up, I think it's very smart that you keep an open mind about outside songs and cutting outside songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear guys on their second, but usually it's their third album, and I hear some of these guys mm-hmm. go, yeah, I had to really have a conversation with myself about outside songs, and then I realized we need to just...
And outside songs are the songs that you didn't write.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. a lot of the new artists now start out writing songs or co-writing, mm-hmm. You know, with a lot of the big elite Nashville songwriters. Yeah. And then after a while, you start to go, am I really getting the best songs I can get?
No.
Or is there somebody?
No.
I like how she just said.
No, you're not.
No. I mean, it's like saying, I'm only going to eat my cooking.
Yes.
To think that you're the only one who can do a really good fried catfish, you're kidding yourself.
Yeah. The new artists that are smart enough to realize that, hey, I'm so open to an outside song and cut outside songs, are the ones that win, in my opinion. And Sam is one of them. Sam is like, there's a song on his album called Kids. He did not write. Keith is featured on that song, and I'll tell you a story about that song. Keith almost cut that song. Do y'all know that song?
Yeah, I love that.
Keith almost cut that song.
And we're talking about Sam Williams.
Yes, Sam Williams. Yeah. So Keith almost cut that song and didn't cut it. So the song laid around for probably a year or 2 years. And I'll tell you a story about that. So we were driving around on a Sunday afternoon, and Sophia said, hey, she's like, whatever happened to that song, Kids, that Keith was going to cut? She's like, I love that song. I'm like, let me listen to that song again. Played the song. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to play this for Sam. I'm like, he'll probably text me back and say he hates it. And I sent it to him. He immediately texted me back and said, oh, my God, I love this. And he was smart enough to go in and cut it, outside song.
Mm-hmm.
And we got Keith on it because Keith loved the song, almost cut it, but it was a little too young for him. So kind of like that's the story.
Is that also part of the thing where artists are aware of how old they are and what mm-hmm. the song is, mm-hmm. the age of the song,
mm-hmm.
What you know, the character in the song?
Right, the character in the song. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's good because mm-hmm. I always hate that. You hear like a... like an older artist, and it sounds like they're creeping on some teenage
girl. That's hard. I mean,
I've heard that.
Yes.
It's really hard. I mean,
I don't want to name names, but I've heard that song.
that doesn't bug me because, again, I think.
Oh, God, I hope it's not one of my.
I was going to say, I think it doesn't matter. If it's a good song and the artist can sing the heck out of it, I don't care who sings it.
I'm opposite.
So if Luke Bryan's singing a song about going pick up girls, what I was going to say is
15 years. I don't know if he can get away with that.
Can he get away? Could he get away with "Shake It For Me, Girl"? "Shake It For Me, Girl"? Now,
yes, but I don't know. I don't know,
Carson. What do you think?
You know my love for that song. I love that song so much.
Have you guys ever seen the video of Carson shaking it during the Luke Bryan concert? No. I've never seen Carson dance. No. Carson was losing her mind.
I don't dance
often.
It was
one of those things where I was taking a picture of like another friend, and in the background I noticed somebody was just going wild. And I went, yes, Carson.
But the thing is, it's because that song, I will say, helped to craft Luke's vibe.
Yes.
So because of his persona now, it's a weird thing to say, could he cut it now? Because he's already crafted the establishment. Mm-hmm. But if you go back to some and, you know, if there's a song that ages them, or frankly, if there's a song that the production feels a little too modern, and you're like, sir, you are 50. Like, calm down. There are some that just don't mesh for me.
See, and I don't know. I don't have a problem with that.
Some people can get away with it.
Yep.
Okay, but not everybody can get away with
Like anybody. Dina Carter, I found that was kind of an interesting one because I thought Strawberry Wine, to me, she was too young. If you want to say that. I never thought that.
Either.
She singing it now is different.
He's right, though, because when I heard that song, I was like,
did you pull over on the road? No, was that like a pull over on the road?
No, what was that, 1996? So I was like 16 years old. So that song, she was in her, you know, late 20s. It made sense to me that she was singing it. But if I had been in my early 30s, I go, what's a 20-something-year-old doing singing this song? It's a little too nostalgic for that. I'll give you an example on the other side, The Color Pink. So there's a song that some friends of ours wrote, Jordan Walker and Johnny McGuire. They were a duo. And they never cut this song. It's a song they played on our show that was huge. And it has a million views on YouTube of them playing it here. But they never recorded it. They had a deal with a BBR or BMG. And well, yeah, because they're like two dudes, 25 and 26, and they didn't have any kids. And the song's about having a daughter. And it didn't make any sense. Like, it wasn't believable, these two 25-year-old guys singing
that
song.
I thought
song.
They did such a great job with
they
it.
They did a good job singing but it just vocally. Isn't. They did a good job because they wrote it and they sang it well, but it would have been better if, like, Justin Moore or somebody who
that
could
has kids,
make
that
believable.
Here, give it to Thomas.
By the way, I'm going to send you that song. I don't represent them, Missy, but I'm sending you that song because you should play it for Keith. It's that good.
Send it to me. Well, see, look, send it to me. You never know.
I didn't even think that wasn't my motivation, but now that thinking, I'm like, I'm gonna stand on this song.
Well, like Patrick talked about on Music's Greatest Mysteries, which is a show on Access that we've all contributed to, and you talk about Trisha versus Leanne on How Do I Live, and that Leanne Rimes, I think, just didn't have the life experience.
They didn't believe it
to have been evocative of that emotion.
The movie producers were like, "It's like a 15-year-old kid. I don't believe this."
Yeah,
it's still. I think it was the pronunciation. That was my only issue with that. I love Leanne. You guys know I love her. Like even the Coyote Ugly album was awesome. But she would say, "How do I leave?" in that song.
I don't remember that. Oh wow.
How do I leave without? And it just always it never sat well with me. And you know, again,
I love her. We didn't even mention that on the TV show. We should have been like somewhere a producer sitting in West Hollywood going,
I think Bubba did mention it. I don't think they used it, but yeah.
Cutting room floor.
Yeah. You know what? That's right. There's no way you sat through an interview about that song without bringing it up.
Yeah, he did. He did bring it up. Are there songs that you passed on that went on to do really well and you're like, man, I missed that? Or are you just kind of go, hey, you know, it's the
I
way it goes.
I should listen to one more stanza.
Let me think.
The thing is, you can't bat 1,000. I mean, as great as you think you are, you're going to miss some.
There was a song that I didn't pass on. Tim passed on it. sent it to him. So I'm like, okay, I did my job. I sent it to
him. Yeah, it's your fault.
And it's like a lot of times it's like, look, I don't know about this song. I'm sending it to you because you need to be the one to pass on it, not me, because I'm real unsure about it. But it was the Lee Bryce song. The truck song.
I drive your truck. Oh, yeah.
That one. Yeah, I pitched that to him, and it's like, oh, boy. I knew. And there's another song I just can't think, and there's so many.
Well, I know a song that Tim passed on, but that he had you send to somebody else.
Who?
I think it was called Breathe. Was that?
Oh,
that a song?
Okay. I got a story for that. Yes. Okay. Well, so my husband was in the process of cutting Faith. For the Breathe, the This Kiss album, I think Breathe was on. Nope, was it Breathe and This Kiss together on that album?
I thought so. Yeah,
look it up and see. I'm not sure, but I was. That song was originally is like pitched to me just in general from a songwriter by the name of Holly Lamar and Stephanie Bentley, and they're like, we get the song. I don't know. Just listen to it. And let me know what you think. And I think, oh God, I love this. I think Tim Mike could do this. It was a female singing it. I think it was Stephanie Bentley singing it. And so Faith was at the house recording, and Tim was hanging out with Faith. And I'm like, Tim, come here. I want to play you something. And we went out to my car, and I played it for him. And he's like, man, he's like, God, I love this. But you need to play that song for Faith. And so that's how that went down. I played it for Tim first, and he's like, no, it's really not me, but you need to play it for Faith.
Yeah.
So
that's like a career song.
Career.
That's one of those where the right
huge
person.
Huge. Yeah.
And so. I could not picture Tim in that video doing what Faith did.
No.
That'd be the something to see.
No. So that was, yeah. And then another story of how persistent I am when I hear a song that I absolutely love and, like, they keep passing on it. So there's a song on Tim's album, and I can't remember which one. It's called When the Stars Go Blue. Mm-hmm. Do y'all remember that song?
Yeah.
I pitched that song to him 10 times before he, like, finally realized, I don't know, maybe I should really listen to this and cut this song. So it's like I'm always, like, real persistent on songs that I really, really, like, truly believe in. I just keep bringing it up, bringing them back.
Tell us about Blue Ain't Your Color, because that is a mm-hmm. unique song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's not something that I think anybody else in mm-hmm. town could have got away mm-hmm. with as a single.
It was that was just from a random pitch from Nate at Corman, Nate Lowry from Corman Music, and it was on a snow day, and I was at home, and I was just listening. I had just started listening to songs for Keith, and he had already cut the majority of his album. And I was like, how am I going to find songs for Keith? Because his album's pretty much done. And I was just like, God, this is going to be really hard. Because he brought me in late. That was the first album I started A&R. And he kind of brought me in late. A lot of the stuff was already done. And so I was at home one day. It was a snow day. The kids were home. And I was just, you know, tons of songs listening through. Bam, 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 bam. And that song came on. And I just was like, oh, something just... And I like to listen to songs, and I like to be busy while I'm listening to songs, so that way...
So it's background, like it's the background. Way people listen to it.
Yes, and it just caught my attention. So I went, okay, wait a minute. So I went back, and I listened to it again, got it to Keith, and I don't think any of us knew that song was going to be that big for Keith. I think, you know, he cut it, and it was like, yeah, this is really cool, but it wasn't... You know.
Yeah, I think I remember him saying at the number one party, mm-hmm. after the song had gone number one, that he didn't think that was going to... He really wanted it in the album, but he didn't really think it was going to be that big of a hit
and
on radio.
Like one of his biggest songs.
Yeah,
and I remember the writers at the number one party that they were talking about mm-hmm. how much they loved the song, and one of them had wanted to record it, and they said the only artist will give it to is Keith.
I would give this song to is Keith Urban. So a smart song plugger was like, let me get that song in Missy Sands.
Who was the artist? Oh, gosh. He's a writer, artist, and I can't think of his name right now. It's leaving me, but
and I know too, and it's
That was. I mean, Keith is the artist that knows exactly what he wants. He is the most focused artist and knows exactly songs. I mean, he's so just brilliant in that way. He's hard. He's hard to pick songs for.
Do you think that's learned, or is it something that he's just
I think that's learned. I think I don't know. I think it's probably through the years. He just has honed in on what he wants to do, and he's always trying. And here's another thing that I think a lot of young artists don't do these days is they don't raise the bar from the debut album to the sophomore album to the next album. It's like Tim and Keith, they're like so good at that of like raising the bar each time with each new album.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard. It's not easy.
It's hard, really hard.
Because you want to do, by the way, it was Stephen Lee Olsen was the guy who wanted to cut the song.
Yeah.
That you want to keep doing what people already know you for. Like, you're an artist.
It's easy to sound the same every album because that's what people expect.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. But you can't, so you can't come out and totally flip it and do something completely different because your audience isn't going to know that doesn't even sound like whoever song. Mm-hmm. But you got to just change it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You know who else is good about doing that is Lee Bryce. I give him a lot of props because he does the same thing. He knows exactly who he is. I don't know if you've ever worked with him or not, but I'm just, every album, they sound very different than the album prior, but they're also, you can tell that he knows exactly what kind of song he wants.
He's a great writer, a great artist. And I feel like he's just under the radar. You know, it's just like, you know, he's so good. He needs to go to that next level, I feel like. And I don't know. I could be wrong, but
there's always those guys that just kind of, low key getting 10 number ones, you know. Yeah.
Which is what's great about Lee, though, because he'll come out with that song and you're like, boom, that just hit you between the eyes. And then he comes out the next one and it does the same thing time after time.
Yeah.
And otherwise, he's just like, hey, man.
Hey, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think Billy Currington was the one who said, every one of my hits is a comeback. He goes, but it's true. If that wasn't him that said that, somebody said it about him. But it was true. It was like, oh, man, Billy Currington, he's so great. His last four songs were all number ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
You just kind of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
it doesn't seem like he's throwing it out as much as he is.
Yeah.
Do you ever get, or I don't even know if it's even possible, do people like complete, I'm from Dothan, Alabama, and they write a song and they get it to you somehow?
I usually don't take those songs just because of them coming back and trying to sue the artist and Byron, the producer, the artist, the label. I mean, that's happened several times.
And how would they sue? What's the...
Well, they just say, well, I pitched that song, and that song is just like something else. And just something like that. But I don't usually try to take unsolicited, like outside. I usually work within the industry and the writers and the publishers. Now, if it's somebody that you guys are like, hey, you know, really, this person, you know, I really like this song, you know, and I respect you guys and you know, love you guys, and I would go, okay, I'll listen, but it's
I know that though,
so many people, I was going to say, so many people call us saying, how do I get these songs heard by the artists or by the song pluggers and all that, and we're like,
I always have no idea.
Exactly.
Go to NSAI.org and that will tell you how to do this.
And also your performing rights, get to know your if you're ASCAP or BMI writer, get to know those guys at BMI and ASCAP because they can be huge champions for you guys.
And if you're listening and you're not one of those things, that's a call you need to make. You need to figure out how do I get in.
And what is NSAI again?
NSAI is Nashville Songwriters Association International. Mm-hmm. But you can find it just NSAI, Google it, or NSAI.
Let's pull it up now. Yeah. Oh, the space program. I got it. Yes, I know NSAI.
They're about to tap on the asteroid soon.
That's funny.
Do you see that? We're going to send an asteroid to, a missile to hit an asteroid to try and knock it off course to practice. If it ever happens in real life,
it's in
November.
I mean, November?
Yeah,
oh my gosh!
Yeah, so there's
where is this happening? There's
somewhere in space.
And it's thank you, Bubba. Aren't you glad you came in? in space, it's going to happen in space. So there's an asteroid that is going to be coming nearish, not a danger, but it's close enough that it's a great practice run. So NASA is saying, or SpaceX, I don't know, I guess they're doing a collaboration or whatever, but they're going to shoot a missile. It's going to go 15,000 miles an hour? Is that what,
yes.
Oh
yeah, it's like right around 15,000 miles an hour.
And hit it and see if they can't alter the course.
Okay, that is amazing. That is so intriguing to me.
Here's the more intriguing part, is that Bubba thinks that this possibly isn't a test. We really
conspiracy?
Yeah, we have something headed our way, so this is the cover for it. And if it works, they go, look, it worked. It was successful. If it doesn't work, then we find out.
We're going to die anyway.
Oh, my God. Please.
See, why? Aren't you glad you came here for that? Why did y'all do that?
Countdown is on.
You were dying.
We should all go out.
Dying. You like that?
Go ride a bull.
Go ride a bull.
The weirdest thing is the asteroid is called Fu Manchu. It's the weirdest. I don't know if that's coincidence or not.
I think that's the best line in that song.
It is.
I really do. Boom, yes. Everybody sees it. I'm like,
I always said, skydiving. It's like every single time I immediately, because he sings it in a way where it's like he's falling.
Yes, I never thought of that.
And I always hear the skydiving part.
I'm never going to not hear that now. Just like,
I'll tell you another song that is right up there with Live Like You Were Dying is Humble and Kind. Yeah. And that song was
that whole song.
Well,
album.
I wonder how did Tim get a hold of that song?
Well, I don't know, but I was just going to say, from Missy?
From her, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, though, that whole album was so good. And that may be Tim's most underrated album. That's the one with the cow art on it.
No.
Is that the one?
No.
Which one's the one with the cow art? That's my favorite one. It's like real damn music or something like that.
Damn country music.
Yeah, that album, record. I love.
I don't remember what songs was I even on that album.
I swear
album.
It's got some cow print somewhere on there.
Live Like You, Humble and Kind was like a weekly meeting that I always go to at Universal, and the guy by the name of Travis Gordon, who's a plugger there, was just... Hey, I got this song, and it's a Lori McKenna song. Are you guys familiar with Lori McKenna? Mm-hmm. Just if you don't know Lori McKenna, please go get her record, go look her up. She's an incredible songwriter. It was a poem, and it was on a voice recording on an iPhone, and Travis played me the voice recording of this poem of her just saying it, and. She had written it for her kids. It was a poem for her kids. She has like 6 kids in Boston. But anyway, there was something, I have no idea, there was something to that song. It laid around, for a while with Tim.
I don't know how.
Cut it. And it's just like, and sometimes when you go in a studio, you just don't know what song is going to come out. And it has the little fairy dust on it. Breathe was the same way. You go in the studio and you just think, okay. We're going to cut this and never know how it's going to come out. But just some songs, whatever it is, the musicians connect to it. I don't know. But that song had fairy dust, the gods, the song gods, whatever. And wow.
Yeah, that was everywhere. That whole entire – I remember that was like the song of the summer because we would be out by the pool and like every 45 – Humbling Kind.
Oh, yeah.
It was like every 45 minutes I would hear it on the radio. And I figured out why I keep thinking it's cow print on the album. I'm going to show Carson over here.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Because it looks like a Chick-fil-A billboard.
Let me see.
It does look like Eat More Chicken.
I can't turn it all the way around.
My phone.
But it looks like the cows wrote on the billboard there. See? It looks like a Chick-fil-A billboard. And that's why in my head, baby, I see
like
little
a
cows.
Very creative mind.
Oh.
I don't see
that's
cows.
That's her nice way of saying she doesn't see it.
I don't see cows. Do you
it looks like a Chick-fil-A
billboard. You have a very creative mind. I'm going to use that against Bubba.
So I'd also like to point out the difference in her physique versus the rest of us. That maybe she isn't as familiar with Chick-fil-A
billboards.
No, Chick-fil-A 2 days a week. Hey,
2 days a week? When I'm cheating on my diet, I eat Chick-fil-A twice before lunch.
Well, I'm just telling you guys, I'm going to Photoshop a cow painting the Tim McGraw album cover, and I'm going to send it to you, and you'll be like, I get it now.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I'm looking at it. That looks like a Chick-fil-A billboard.
See what I mean?
I can kind of see it.
It's more chicken.
I get that.
Cows up on the billboard writing hate mail about chickens.
That's it. I want some Chick-fil-A sauce now.
Hey, how hard is it to get a song like in a commercial or a film?
Well, you have people that, like, like with like big publishing companies and smaller independent companies, you just take a song that you love and you're going, oh, I really think this song could be great for Yellowstone. And they have people that listen specifically for Sync. And you just have to find those people.
Sync means that's when you put a song in a movie or a TV show, yeah. You're syncing it with video. So okay. That's a different feed.
Yeah, it's just
whoever does Yellowstone, by the way, is awesome.
Out of the park.
And So is Tim going to have any input? And I mean, maybe you would know, maybe you wouldn't. I don't know. But in the prequel that they're going to be involved in, like as far as placing music?
Yeah, I mean, I probably don't need to speak to that. But I mean, I think he'll have.
Okay. All right. We're all excited.
He and Faith have been at Cowboy Camp. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but they've been at Cowboy Camp.
I have seen the articles. Oh, okay, great.
They're at Cowboy Camp learning how to rope and drive a covered wagon and.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because it's old. It's the pre.
Yes, the 1980s.
Yeah, so they have, I mean, yeah, it's rigorous.
So they're not wearing deodorant right now.
Stanky. But Tim posted a picture on Instagram where where the side of his jean was like where he had the gun, you know, pulling the gun out and stuff, and it had all like gun smoke and all that on his side of his jeans.
Man, why do hot dudes have to do that too?
Dang.
Why can't you just leave it at that? Like, why can't you just post a frumpy picture?
Yeah.
Like, go ahead. Like,
they don't have those. Yeah. They don't have frumpy pictures.
Oh, they do. They do.
Okay, so I do a radio show with Tracy Lawrence. So Tracy comes in once a week and we play old country music.
God.
And every now and then, I remember a couple of times Tracy would be sitting in here and he'd just go, Tim just texted me. And he sent me, look at this crap. And it's a picture of Tim, like, spear fishing, like, getting out of the water, holding up a spear with a fish on. And he's like, why you got to send me that? Yeah. You know, we get it, Tim. You can dive 25 feet, kill a fish, come up, and look like you just got out of a Calvin Klein photo ad. But you ain't got to send that. Just send me a picture of the fish.
Yeah. And he probably took that picture 15 times.
I doubt it.
That's probably one take.
I know.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't want to go spearfishing like that because that's too
I don't
want to
go spearfishing how he goes spearfishing.
Well, he goes like free diving 25 feet underwater. I'm like, I can't get that
by
far.
Sharks.
I have too much buoyancy.
Oh, you're like one of those corks that you just.
Oh, yeah. I get 5 feet under the water and the whole ocean's like, spit it out! It's pushing me up.
You look like a breaching whale.
He's not spearfishing in just like, okay. I mean, he's spearfishing like. Where like great whites
like in the Caribbean
in like where there's sharks like everywhere and he was actually chased by a shark one time when he was spearfishing that he didn't know.
That's great. Wow. Hey, you know what, Tim? We got supermarkets. You can get that fish. I'm just saying, there's probably a guy in a truck on the side of the road in the Caribbean sell you that stuff.
Or they have these things called boats. You can sit in the boat.
That's true.
And Photoshop. Yeah. You don't even have to take
Photoshop.
That's a whole different kind of personality. Yeah. It's not for me.
Hey, where can people find you if they want to look at your life and your personal pictures?
They can go to Instagram. Missy Gallimore? Just Missy Gallimore, Instagram.
Missy with an I.
Missy with an I.
Duh,
MissiGallimore. Go follow me on Instagram.
You can go ahead and plug your shop, too, if you want. Why not? She owns a coffee shop.
I do own a coffee shop, which gets just a whole nother story. But, yeah, it's Coffee and Coconuts in Franklin, Tennessee. I've been there for...
Do you really like doing this? Because it doesn't sound like you like doing this.
Y'all just don't know me. I got my hands in so much stuff. The whole management thing is like, whoa, what did I get myself into?
Yeah, that was a good idea. Like I'll build a name in A&R and then I'll open a coffee shop and start a management company and just, you know.
Yeah.
Do you ever get to take a break?
No. I make quilts, too.
No, no. Oh, I will. Can I plug something?
Yeah.
I have started a lifestyle line that... Sam and I kind of came up with. It's called Y'alternative.
Okay, I love it.
I like it.
Y'alternative.
Like yeah.
So it's like the new Nashville is now like Y'alternative. And so like we still have bro country, but it's kind of like hopefully going to be shifting and we're going to be like into this like
what'd
Y'alternative.
You call it? It's a what line?
I've trademarked the name and it's called Y'alternative. So I've had hats made. I've just now started this. Uh-huh. So I went in and had it. The story is Sam and I were in New York, and he was taping this Vivo show. And we were walking after the Vivo show, and we were walking, just walking around. And I said something like, "Y'alternative." And Sam was like, "Oh, my God, I love that." And I thought, you know what? We need to market that. We need to, like, trademark it and do merch and all kinds of stuff. And so I immediately went and had it trademarked, and I had noticed where CMT had inquired about the trademark, but they let it lapse.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, I got it. I had it trademarked, so I've got hats made, and I'm going to be doing some other, like, hoodies and things like
so
that.
It's a clothing line.
It's a clothing line, but it's starting with hats, and it's Y'alternative USA on Instagram, and you can buy hats.
Y'alternative USA.
Mm-hmm.
And well,
trucker hats.
Are you going to do shirts and stuff? Or
yep,
just,
I'm going to do shirts.
Are you going to do 3X? 3X?
Some big shirts.
I will get you a big shirt. I will send you guys hats. How about that? I'm going to send you guys some alternative hats.
That's a nice way of saying we don't have enough guys to send you a shirt.
I will send you hats.
I don't have
and
shirts
socks.
Yet. I just started with trucker hats just to see how
socks,
people would respond.
Gloves.
Yeah.
Those
socks.
Are the things we get.
Yeah.
Yeah,
people
we
send us
well,
socks
that
because they know I can't wear
cute.
Their T-shirt.
You see it?
I do.
Yeah.
Show
Isn't that cute? Yeah.
Show the camera. I want to see
show
what it looks
camera,
like.
Show the camera, Harrison.
Am I holding it up right?
Yeah.
I'm going to tweak it a little bit. That's just the first run. There's some tweaking.
Yeah, but like
there.
It said 70s trucker hat look.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
It's hard to see it. And it says the alternative on it.
Yes, yeah, it says the alternative.
It's embroidered, too.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
is not cheap. That's mm-hmm. a quality item.
Mm-hmm. I will get you guys one.
Carson. Carly.
Right into QVC.
Let's go QVC, Carson. Okay. Go. All give right. it to us. Hold it up
Missy, stand by. Here you go. Okay. Here's
QVC
Carson.
The new alternative lifestyle brand. This was the brainchild of someone from Music Row. She has a history in the industry, and then working with one of her artists, just, you know, this comes from an authentic place, and you can feel like you're part of Nashville, even if you haven't gotten to experience Music City yet. The embroidery is top quality. You know that it's not going to fall off with washings. You can wear it out in the rain, because when you go to your favorite country festival, sometimes the weather doesn't cooperate.
Come on.
Preach, girl, preach.
Oh, I love
preach.
It. Carson. Yeah. This is one of my favorites.
Carson,
just
I love
do
you.
That. I'm telling you, how did Carson not work for QVC.
I know it.
It's unbelievable. She just wing that stuff. Just keep going and going. It's so great.
That's how we're going to lose Carson. She's going to walk in and
oh,
she's going to go,
no doubt.
Well, I've got an offer from QVC.
Yeah. And like, none of us are going to be upset. We're going to be like, go girl.
Run, girl.
And you have that voice. You just have that voice that works.
Know,
she it sounds like she was raised in Connecticut.
God.
She was. The rest of us are all like.
Wait, how long have you been here in Nashville?
Moved here in 2003.
Oh,
so it's been, yeah. it's been
it's
a
been
hot
a minute.
Minute.
It's been a
yeah.
hot minute. Yep.
Yeah, Bubba and I are from the swamp, and Dee's from east of here where he can't say Hill or Vince Gill. But Carson.
Gale. I say Vince Gill.
Vince Gill.
Gill and Heel.
Faith
Heel.
It's the only thing I say. I really don't say anything else.
No,
hillbilly-ish
don't.
Except
no,
for Heel.
It comes
heel.
Out of Heel.
You actually can say Hill for hillbilly, hill. But you can't say Heel.
I don't say Heel. Hillbilly.
I say Gill.
Hillbilly's fine. That's so weird. So I can say hillbilly,
but
I can't say
Heel. That Heel.
Right. What is that?
I can't
Wait, say
that. I can't for the love of God. If I say, I'm going to the store, I can say it. But if I said, I think I have something in my eye, it's my cage and just comes out. It's just that one word. It just.
Where are
all
you from?
The time.
Like what?
I'm from New Iberia, Louisiana.
Where
they make Tabasco sauce next to the swamp. That's where I'm from.
Is that from, so.
South of Lafayette.
Okay.
10 miles from the coast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Tim's from Rust.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Wait.
No, Tim's from Ruston, yeah. Or,
oh, he is from
or
Ruston?
Somewhere in North Louisiana.
Yeah, he's from Louisiana, but I
thought it was from...
No, it's
no,
a little
it's
town outside
Ruston.
Of Ruston. I can't remember
Gosh, what's a small town outside of Ruston? Piggly Wigglyville?
Piggly Wiggly. All right, do not hate on Piggly Wiggly. That is my... I love Piggly
man,
Wiggly.
Man, and listen, I'm from Cookeville. Like, I know Piggly Wiggly.
Is there still Piggly Wigglies around?
Yes.
There's
yes.
one on there Ruston is. In Nashville.
A friend of mine in college got to dress up as the pig because that was her weekend job.
Oh, wow.
Wow. This
Love
says
Piggly
Tim
Wiggly.
Is from Delhi. I don't think
I thought it was Stark.
Monroe.
Stark.
No, he's
Louisiana.
No.
Stark.
Yeah. There was another thing. That's yeah. Delhi. I'm like, no, because if he was from Delhi, there'd be a sign. And I've been to Delhi, and there's no sign.
All they got is a sign. You mean sign?
A sign. There's a sign outside the Delhi.
By the room?
By the room.
No,
the
room.
But you don't have a real Cajun accent.
I don't. No,
you
I
really
can hide it. 20 years of talking on the radio, but if my mama called me right now, Michelle, I'd fall into that.
You would fall into that?
Oh, yeah, it comes out all the
or
time.
Alcohol.
I can't do nothing about that. If you
when
give
you're
me
around
some
mom or alcohol.
Five or six Whiskey Patrick. Five Whiskey Patrick show up, you talk like that.
We can always
much
tell
louder.
Him. You can always go, oh,
but louder. Thank you, Carson. It's true. Five Whiskey Patrick
come in on
does
a
not
Monday.
Have volume control.
He'll come in on a Monday. I'll be like, oh, I see you went home for the weekend. He's got white shrimp boots on.
That's it, man.
Got him up in the pig? Back of the truck in between the cab and the bed.
Is that pig crap on your white shrimp
and
boots?
What does that
yeah,
smell?
That's that. I was at the pig barn. Yeah. The pig barn. You know.
God. You know, the best part about Piggly Wiggly, if I may, is food. When you walk back into the meat section.
No, you gotta.
And they have that, the ham, it's the salted ham, and it's hanging in that white mesh looking, almost looks like pantyhose. And it's hanging, and it's hanging heavy, and you walk by, and it's so on this some sort of like a wooden hook mm-hmm. of some sort, and you go by,
have
and
you
just and you just caress it, and you just kind of run your hand up and down
no,
it.
No, stop!
And then you smell your hand, smells like salt.
Meat.
It's like salt and ham, and oh. And you just,
we love Piggly Wiggly.
Oh, so good.
I thought it was fake until I went to college in Mississippi.
And y'all remember?
I want to stop. Carson just said she thought Piggly Wiggly was something they made up and driving Miss Daisy. She didn't even know that was a real thing. Carson watched you driving
really?
Miss Daisy thinking to herself, that's a stupid name for a fake supermarket. Who would call a supermarket Piggly Wiggly?
I remember when I was a little kid, I watched Close Encounters, and they had a Piggly Wiggly semi, and I was like, ooh. And I thought it was so crazy that they used a local store.
Yeah,
a local store. No, it's not a local store. They
were
everywhere.
Say, what about Piggly Wiggly? You had a Piggly Wiggly memory.
No, I just love. No, I don't. Okay. I just
we call them
Piggly
Wiggly memories.
The pig.
Yeah.
My friend Heather in college worked at the pig.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the pig?
That's what she called it. She worked
at
the pig.
The pig. All right. That was fun.
Missy, thank you for coming
yeah.
in. It was so fun to hear yeah. all the stories and behind the scenes stuff.
Stories for days.
I know.
Billy Sherrill's story, really quick. I have to say this because it's such an iconic.
So if anyone's listening that doesn't know, Billy Sherrill was a super famous producer and A&R man. Who made George not only a bunch of George Jones, Sam Wynette records, but like what most people consider
Charlie
the greatest.
Rich.
The greatest country song of all time, or the greatest recording, which is He Stopped Loving Her Today. That was Billy Sherrill.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, go
Stand
on.
By Your Man.
Yes.
And then the Charlie Rich song. What was that Charlie Rich song?
Behind Closed Doors. Girl,
oh, The Most Doors? Beautiful Girl yeah. and Behind Closed Doors. Yes. But anyway.
So that was your first job out of college,
That
right?
was my first job. Just remember, like, getting a call from his assistant at the time. I had nothing about country music whatsoever. This is just a funny story. I love Billy, and I just remember this so vividly, and I miss that man because he was just always so protective of me. He would tell me, like, you stay away from Johnny Rodriguez. Don't you dare talk to Johnny Rodriguez. And if David Allan Coe comes in here with his five wives, do not look at him. Do not pay him any attention. He was but anyway.
You're gonna become number six. Yeah. We don't need that.
And he's like, okay, I want you to come in and talk to me. And I'm like, okay. So it was like 6 o'clock in the evening. It was on Music Row, and it was all these old houses. You know, Music Row has mm-hmm. all these awesome old houses. And I'm thinking, oh goodness, what have I gotten into these houses? So I park it. It's Major Bob Music now. It used to be called Al Gallico Music, and that's where Billy had his studio. So I walked upstairs, and Billy's in there, and he's. Billy was just so eccentric. That's what made him so brilliant. But he offered me a glass of champagne, and I'm thinking, oh, Lord, what have I gotten in myself into?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I want to play you something. And he puts it on, and it was a Charlie Rich song that he had just cut on Charlie Rich. And I was thinking, what is this? And he's like, do you like this? And I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I don't. I don't really know anything about country. And he's like, you're hired.
I like that.
And then he hired me.
Was it because you told him the truth?
I told him the truth. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm just like, oh, I don't know. I don't really like it, but I don't like country either. But
I want to tell this story,
which
just
is
real
so
quick.
Crazy that you went from that to being someone who's so influential.
I don't know.
There's a story, and I don't know how much of this is apocryphal, but Reba had been in town for almost 10 years making records, mm-hmm. and she finally started to have hits in the early '80s. And she'd always wanted to record a Harlan Howard song, and she'd never gotten to because Harlan Howard was such a big deal. He'd save his best songs for the, you know, for the people who were making him money. So Reba was finally big enough to get a meeting with him, and she went and sat down in his office, and he played her a song, and she didn't like it. He said, "What'd you think of that?" And she goes, "I have to be honest with you. I don't think I can cut that. I don't think that's going to work for me." And he goes, "Okay." And he played her a second song, and it was worse than the first one. And she goes, "I don't think I can cut that." And he goes, "Good job, honey. Those are stinkers. I just wanted to see if you would tell me the truth." And then he pulled a song out of the drawer, and it was "Somebody Should Leave."
Oh my gosh!
And then she goes, "Can I have that one? That's the only one I wanted you to hear."
It's just like, okay, but that's what I don't. We'll end on this. That's just what I miss so much now is the camaraderie and you just don't find those songs anymore. I would probably fall out of my chair if somebody walked in the room and played me Wichita Lineman.
Yeah.
Glenn Campbell.
Yeah,
Wichita
Lineman. Okay, I would like. I get that. I get that. But also, how many Wichita Lineman songs are there?
Yeah.
Do you think there's a lot of those?
No.
Okay,
oh my
then.
God.
I mean, then,
no,
then, but, then it's not fair to say that you wish one would happen today. And
well,
and
as
the
you talk to
today
you,
is terrible.
You don't hear those songs today. You don't. Somebody Should Leave. You don't.
Yeah.
I don't. You don't
but
hear those songs.
But you were
songs.
Just talking about Humbling Kind. I mean,
okay, yeah. Y'all are really like. See?
No, it's just they're still there. So I think you know we shouldn't be down on ourselves. Those songs are still out there, and they're still being brought
to
us every day.
Where are they? Where are they? Because I sure as heck have not heard Humbling Kind Humbling Kind was written. So I don't know. I miss the camaraderie. And I think it's getting back a little bit, but I just miss how it was. And I wasn't around a lot of that because that was kind of like before my time. But it's just, you know, the writers and the like the Kris Kristofferson's and the, what you read, how the Kris Kristofferson's and the Johnny Cash, and that was before my time. But how they're, you know, and the Waylon and the Willie and how they're, we're all just so close. But I feel like it is kind of getting back to that a little bit with some of the artists around.
I think it all balances itself. Yeah.
And I was going to say, too, that, you know, in a weird way, I think with your argument is that people are so worried about trying to get the next hit when then they were just looking for songs they liked.
No, but that's apocryphal though because they were looking for the next hit too.
You say
but
this
they
word.
Recorded.
I know. No,
used it twice. And
okay,
twice.
If
I don't
you
know
say
what
it three times, does Beetlejuice appear?
No,
here's
the thing.
No.
I feel like
apocryphal.
No, I feel like people are chasing. They're chasing the next thing, and you should not be chasing the next thing. You should just be writing from your heart and real songs.
That's right.
And quit chasing. Don't ever
don't
chase.
Don't chase it.
Don't That's chase right. it.
Don't go chasing waterfalls. Stick to the rivers and lakes that you're used to.
Now that could... Wait, you got something. Somebody write that down.
I always hated
feels
that
like
song.
A hit.
I hated that song because I always felt like that, to me, was telling people, you know, don't reach out and expand yourself. Stay where you're at. Stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Never... Well... That can go both ways. I could say never stay in your lane, but there's a lot of times where you do have to kind of like stay in your lane.
You got to pick and choose your battles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this
has been
fun.
Different podcast, and
it was quite apocryphal.
Very, very apocryphal.
Here's how I know we went for a long time because I didn't remember saying it the first time. So that's how
really?
I know
it was 2 minutes
it was
before.
Like, five minutes earlier. You said
it. Don't look at me and get on me for my memory.
When
he can't remember something he said 5 days ago.
So when you started the Reba story,
I remember. What?
Oh, I did. Oh, wow. I said it to me. Okay, I'm an idiot.
I feel like you're hypnotized.
I don't know any other good words, okay? That's a good word.
Missy, thank you.
Oh, my God. Thank you, guys. This is fun.
Hope you had fun.
I do. I love talking about songs, and it's still a passion for me, and I still get excited when publishers call and go, oh, my God, I have a great song. I got to come play it for you. Where are you? I'm going to come track you down. Where are you? That gets me excited.
There is... full transparency, we have you here on the podcast. We want you to hear one song that was written by
no,
us.
Are you joking?
No, and we're about to play it.
About to play it.
Are you
is
ready?
This a, oh my God. No, no Carson, please help me.
No. You're going to love this. I think this is a hit.
Now, just be honest, okay?
Oh,
and just listen.
Before we do that, and.
And look at all that canvas you got right there.
Throwing that extra
this
gold.
Was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day.
You see, you even figured it out.
Here's the podcast.
You figured out the words before.
What?
That's
what
tells
a
you
hit
it's
song.
A hit.
It's a hit.
It's a hit. It's catchy.
Yeah.
It's a chorus. It's got a chorus. It's got a hit chorus to it.
I know the writer. I hear he's cute.
Oh, just saying. Bye, everyone.
Oh, man. Thank you, guys.